Blog Talk Radio. Radio.
Believe everything.
Believe everything.
Welcome to the UAW Factory Whistle Show with Donnie C., Dick, Scott, and Jeff. They talk about union workers' opinions, concerns, and questions. Call in and join the conversation at 347-324-3752.
All right, I think we got everybody on. Dick and Scott, how are you doing?
Hey, hello.
Hello.
Hello?
Hello. Oh, I'm sorry. This isn't Scott.
No, this is his wife. I was calling so you wouldn't miss it, and I didn't realize that you automatically brought me in. I thought I had to press one.
Oh, you do, but I seen the number, and I said, well, that's the Scott. I'll get him in. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. He's coming.
Okay, I'll put you back on hold. All right, Dick. You're with us?
Yep.
All right. Scott's beautiful wife, and we're waiting. He'll push one when he gets here, I think. We got a lot of emails, Dick.
Good.
Yeah, we got quite a few, about 8 of them or 9 of them. And let's see if Scott's back. Scott, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
I was getting a cup of coffee.
Oh.
Got to have coffee. I don't know about you, but I got to have coffee.
Me too. I drink a lot of coffee.
So what I just missed? Something was being said.
Yeah, I was just saying we got a lot of emails today.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so we might as well get right to it because it's going to take all the show to answer some of these. I think I haven't looked through them, but they look linked. You know, they got the link. I'm going to change the time of the show to 9 o'clock tonight. It's going to probably take that long to answer some of these. All right, we just changed it. Okay, this is to Dick. I would like you to tell me why is the UAW always supporting Democrats? It seems no matter what they do, the UAW will support them. I'm an independent and will only vote for someone that will help our country. That's right. I put my country first and not my pocketbook. I used to do that. I'm hearing echo somewhere. I used to do what the UAW told me, but I grew up and did my own research and found there is no difference between the parties. So why is it so many of my brothers and sisters in the UAW so blind to this fact? Thanks to Teresa for all the great articles, and thanks to all of you for the information. This is Ann from Arlington, Texas, Arlington Truck.
What was that name again?
Ann.
It's Ann from Arlington. Why don't you go first, Scott?
Well, I can only speak on my behalf. I consider myself an independent. My party doesn't exist anymore. I would have been considered a constitutional Republican. Webster's definition of a Republican is not what the Republican Party is today, nor is the Democratic Party. Our government was founded as a republic, and we have a constitution and a bill of rights that's supposed to oversee the laws of our land and how we're supposed to get along with one another, so to say. Our politics have run very far amok, so far amok that I agree with Ann that the both parties are the same. They both go to the same bank. The Republicans and the Democratic senators and the congresspeople, they're all millionaires too. They all lobby for their own special interests that a lot of times removes the general constituencies out of the field of play when it comes to what they're trying to achieve. I can't tell people how to do this. You have to just go and do your own homework and look at both these parties, look at certain people, look at the causes, look who lobbies for these individuals, look what these individuals stand for, look at how they vote. And a lot of times people will be surprised. They think that the party that they're supporting and what they're voting for might be two different things. So you really need to educate yourself when it comes to politics and as far as any organization that you belong to. The political scenario is, I call it a unicrat, I guess is the best way to, is what I call it. There are very few people in Congress who hold true to what we refer to as original party lines. And I would probably say there's probably just a maybe a couple handfuls of good congressional people out there who actually do what they're going to say they're going to do. It's like everything else. It just takes a little time, and then you are influenced by either money, lobbyists, or for personal gain. It's just like what Dick would always talk about when we run for political office. It's no different. Do you run for the honor and the privilege to serve the people or for the power and the money? And unfortunately, that's where we're at. I could sit here and talk about politics all night long because there's a lot of things that are very, very, very broken. And we've become so far removed of the required system, just like in our, I feel like in our own labor organization, we've become so far removed from the required system and what the Constitution and what some of our bylaws say that you just can't get your head around it. You really can't, and you think people would see that. Mark Twain says it's easier to fool someone than it is to tell them that they've been fooled. And I tell you what, there's a lot of wisdom in them words. But that's all I have to say about that right now, I guess.
All right, Dick.
Okay, well, the question started out, why does the UAW seem so tied to the Democratic Party? Why do they only support the Democratic Party? We cast our lot with the Democrats back in Walter Reuther's day, and we cast our lot with what the Democratic Party was, not the title of the party. And I agree with Scott, there's very little difference between the Democrats and the Republicans right now, because big money really runs our government. However, our union has cast its lot with the Democrats. Bob King has made a particular point with our strike fund dollars of casting his lot to the Democratic Party. I don't see where all the support that we gave the Democrats, in particular our president, has reaped us any great harvest in terms of 8 years of the money we've spent and the rallying of our troops that we have done for this guy. The dilemma that unions have is trying to take on the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who are bound and determined to grind us into the dust. And quite frankly, I don't see that our union has gotten any support from the Democrats in that regard. As of late, there was a reward given to the union, the labor movement. The National Labor Relations Board is now completely populated with five folks, one of them being an ex-UAW lawyer who worked in the UAW legal department. And Obama, who made an interim appointment with a man named Griffin, who was cast out by the Supreme Court, has now submitted his name once again to be the general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board. This guy kind of acts like the U.S. Attorney General on steroids where it comes to making decisions on behalf of the NLRB regarding the Wagner Act and other labor laws that pertain to labor law. This particular person has made no secret of the fact that at one time he worked for the UAW, has made no secret of the fact that he, given the opportunity, will abolish the secret ballot vote in organizing drives. He's an advocate of doing away with the secret ballot vote and replacing that with the so-called card check recognition. And so that's the only tangible thing that I can see that the UAW, or the labor movement, I should say, has gotten in return for 8 years of support. I don't see any time in the near future where the UAW is going to not support Democrats unilaterally or across the board. There is one thing that Steve Jokic used to say when he was president and when he was vice president of the GM department that I actually agreed with wholeheartedly. That was, he would get up in front of the GM council or when he was president at the convention and say this: I am not a Democrat. I am not a Republican. I am a union man. And I firmly believe that this union has to literally publicly break with any party and take up the suggestion that Scott is advocating, and that is that we need to look at the independents, we need to look at the Democrats, and we need to look at the Republicans, and the American labor movement very selfishly has to support those people who in return support labor. But that is why we support the Democrats. I don't agree with it anymore. I think we ought to find whoever we can in Washington, whatever color shirt they're wearing, and get those people together to support the plight of working people in our society, because we are on the downward slope toward extinction here. For all the tens and maybe hundreds of millions of dollars we've given to these politicians, and we still find ourselves fighting a rearguard action. So that's my answer to that, Don.
Very good answer. You too, Scott. And I agree with both.
Next question.
Okay. Hi, everyone. This is a hardworking VW worker. I will not tell you my name because we are getting bullied when we talk about this show, and there has been some fights. We went from great working condition to now people don't talk to each other. I and my co-workers blame the wonderful UAW for this. We do not want a union. We do not want the UAW. When will this stop? Do you have any ideas? I will listen to this show, and no one will tell me to stop. We're talking. I will be talking about this show tomorrow, and that's what I believe in. UAW is not for the workers, and we all see it. We can read it, Bob King. Thank you, one and all. There you go.
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I'm going to try to be careful here.
Of course.
Let me first of all say this is my opinion. I joined the union because of the wages and the benefits. In 1985, the wages and benefits that was offered probably weren't as good as the ones, of course, in 1979. But
right.
That's part of the reason that I joined. I was second generation auto worker. My father was a UAW auto worker.
You gotta be kidding me!
Sorry about that.
Absolutely. we came from a very strong local that was shut down because of the reason that we had a strong local. They made a what I consider a political statement. The township wanted to go back for back taxes. Went to court with General Motors. Won. And they announced they were shutting our plant. And they used that strategy against all the other, well, not all, but a lot of the other locals. They got into the practice of whipsawing locals against locals. And this is no secret. If anybody wants to do a little homework, the International Executive Board allowed that to happen. I'm not going to say they just condoned it. I think they might have even maybe pushed it a little bit at times. I'm just really disappointed where we've came, just like you two are. You know, like my wife would say, the UAW was for the working man. You know, they fought for the worker and for the worker's conditions and the pay and the benefits, and they've seemed to have lost that somewhere along the way. And I myself had rather had seen some other statements made within the last 6 to 8 weeks in the press when we were being picked on again. That's what it was. We were being picked on. We were being badgered by upper management at General Motors. And that was the time that our president of our union should have stepped up and recanted what was being said, and he didn't do that. And I'm disappointed in that. But as far as the plight for the union where we're at, listen, anybody can look online now. I mean, we've got the World Wide Web here. People can see. They can look at history. They can see what's supposed to be the national average for pay for a union member is. And you can go and look at the two tiers that Joe Ashton is pushing so proudly. That's in print. I mean, that's nothing to hide. There's nothing to argue that. I'm not telling a lie to anybody. He wanted 40% of the workforce to be tier two. Well, how does that help the worker? How does that actually help the worker? Go a step further. How does that help the community that worker lives in? Well, gee, let's go a little bit farther. How does that help the community, the economics of the community and the state in which that worker lives? There's a domino effect here. I joined the union. I'm so proud of my union because I'm the union. You're the union. Retirees are the union.
Absolutely.
We just have really poor leaders in our union right now. And that starts at most of the local levels right now, too, because they haven't had a Dick Dangin to sit under, or some places a Jerry Tucker, or, you know, I mean, whether we like them or not, or maybe like a Pete Kelly. Some of these guys had a little fire in them, okay, that do the right thing for the worker because it was the right thing to do. You know, it wasn't because of, you know, financial gain or power. It was taking care of the workers. And
hold on for a minute, Scott. Sure. For the caller that wants to get in, right after they answer this, I'll get you in, 636 area code. Okay, go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. It's very disheartening because I know how I feel. I know how a lot of people feel. And when I hear somebody from Volkswagen, listen, if Solidarity House is listening to this, how much more clear does it have to be to you people? How much more clear does it have to be? People are upset. Do the right thing. Get back to what we're supposed to do by the Constitution. Do the right thing for the people. It's not about helping the corporation. You guys don't represent the corporation. We're the ones who pay the dues. You know, it's disheartening to me when I hear other people who I would think if I myself was trying to go down and want to make people want to have to come and join my union. I'd want them to want to join my union. What do I do to make that lucrative? Well, you're from down south. Usually it was the wages and the benefits.
Right.
I mean, you was probably a little kid when, if you can remember, there was a lot of people from down south that came up to the Rust Belt to get good paying jobs.
You bet. My dad was one of them.
And then they come back down and they talk to their brothers or their sisters or their aunts and their uncles and their cousins and tell them, come up north. You know, you're going to live like a king. Why? Because they joined this union up there and they're making these all these automobiles and trucks, you know. Just life is good. Life should still be good. You know, I could sit here and, like, we can systematically go through everything that's happened from the 1982 contract to now and everything that when Dick was actively working that they fought for is gone. You know, and this week I didn't get some information to Dick that I wanted to get to him. I didn't get something to you that I wanted to get to you. But we're going to mention it tonight, and then hopefully next week we might be able to talk about it a little bit more.
Okay.
Dick will know this, and very few people don't know this. And there's this story behind it, but we don't have to go to the history behind it. All you have to do is take a look at the document. It's called the Warren Memo. And if you look at this, and it was written in 1983, they were already talking about multi-tiered. They were talking about doing away with the IFA. They were talking about taking and doing away with, I just had it and I lost it. And I'm just thinking, there's so much on here, reducing the workforce, how to go out and tell the locals, to go out and tell the workforce that it's okay that the executives are getting big bonuses because they run the company to make it. I'm sorry. We run the company to make the profits for the executives. We do. We build those trucks. They don't. We build them. As far as wanting to join the union, you're still better off doing without. How much better? I'm not going to say anymore. I mean, it's evident. There's evidence out there that proves it's, you know, it's getting harder and harder for me to argue with somebody like that. It really is. But as far as myself, I'm this union, and I'm going to keep fighting for it.
There you go. Good answer. Dick?
Okay, so the question was that he works at the Volkswagen plant.
Right.
Saying that he's being told not to listen to the show.
Yes.
Saying that there are some altercations as a result of listening to the show. He's saying that he considers being approached and told not to listen to the show being bullied. Okay, so let's deal with that. We've been following what's going on at Volkswagen. As to listening to this show, I don't know who's telling you not to listen to the show. These probably could be people who are supporting the International Union. They're entitled to their opinion, but you're entitled to your rights under the Bill of Rights of the United States of America to listen to this show. I'm sorry to hear that there are some people who have gotten to the point of hysteria where they're confronting people and saying, don't listen to the show. I think I can say that since we've been talking about Volkswagen, we have bent over backwards not to incite people to do anything on this show down there. We have only tried to give you some factual reality. And I agree with you. I have spoken with someone who works at the Volkswagen plant who shares your sentiment. When will this be done? When will this be over? Enough already. In that regard, I have a few words to say. They started organizing down there about 2 years ago. About a month ago, the union announced they had a majority of cards signed. Once the union has a majority of cards signed, they are free to go to the National Labor Relations Board and ask for a secret ballot election. The union has announced in the newspaper they don't want a secret ballot election. I will use these words not to be insightful. Our union is predicated on democracy. The highest ruling body in our union is the membership. They're the highest ruling body because they exercise their democratic right to vote. The union has said we don't want a secret ballot election because we don't think we can win one. The alternative path that the union has chosen down there is to say we just want Volkswagen to come in, to sit down in a room with us, and recognize that we are the union. Volkswagen has, the last time they responded to that was in early September. Jonathan Browning is the president of Volkswagen America. He said that as far as Volkswagen was concerned, they wanted the formal process to exhaust itself. The formal process in the National Labor Relations Act, the title of the secret ballot vote conducted by the NLRB is called in that law the formal process. He also said in early September that they have made that clear to the UAW from the very beginning that the UAW wanted to come in and organize. They have said they're having discussions with the UAW. I have no idea why they're having discussions with the UAW. The UAW has a majority of cards. They say there are 1,567 of you down there who are going to determine whether you want a union or not. If the UAW says they have a majority of cards, that means they have somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 cards. The press has said that there are about 602 people who have signed petitions that they choose not to be represented by the UAW. And now you have complaints that have been filed with the National Labor Relations Board. There are two complaints, and I will tell you that probably Volkswagen and the UAW, on advice of their lawyers, are going to be very silent until this legal process exhausts itself. So your air of indecisiveness will go on at your union until the National Labor Relations Board concludes its investigation down there, which I understand is still going on, and they make a decision. But you probably won't see much in the press from Volkswagen or the UAW. It's like any other thing. When a court action starts, the lawyers tell the people they represent to be quiet and don't talk to anybody. And so that's going to happen. So you guys have this limbo period now down there until this investigation is concluded and the director of your region in Georgia makes a decision as to the validity of the two complaints. I am sorry to hear that there are people in the plant who feel that this show is worth fighting about. I don't think I said a thing except the factual reality of your life right now. in terms of where you're at. And I don't think that that's worth anybody fighting about. That's simply a statement akin to me saying water is wet and grass is green. These are the facts as I know them down there. There's no point in you fighting at each other's throats down there because this thing now has gone into a legal process. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. The UAW, on the other hand, and I will say this, it's my union. I belong to it now. I've been paying dues into this union for 50 years. When I retired in 1999, I continued my dues. I'm still paying them. As far as I know, the union has not said what it's going to do for you folks other than provide you with a works council. Well, they can't provide you with a works council as they exist in Germany because they're absolutely illegal here. Union or not, you cannot have a works council in terms of what a works council does in Germany because there are things that a works council does in Germany that only a union can do. Under our laws, when I say a union, that means people who you folks on the plant floor duly elect, take an oath of office, and enjoy legal status as a union representative. There's no hourly person who can be sitting on any body who's not elected who can legally bargain with management over working conditions or hours of work. It just doesn't happen because the National Labor Relations Act in our society says the unions negotiate wages, working conditions, and hours of work, and that they do that in the best interest, in the interest of their members. That's the law. That's what a union does. In Germany, works councils deal with working conditions. They deal with hours of work, and the unions only deal with negotiating economics. Unions negotiate wages and benefits. Unions can negotiate a contract with a company. Unions are voluntary throughout Europe. You may join, you may not join. A way of saying that is the whole of Europe is a big right-to-work place. But unions fundamentally bargain on wages and benefits. If they negotiate a company with a contract with a company to where they would get involved in something else, maybe such as works councils usually represent people in discharges. This is all German law. What a works council does has nothing to do with a collective bargaining agreement. Works Council exists, is defined, and is stated what it does under law. In our society, what a union does is all negotiated in a labor agreement. The Wagner Act, which some people say contains the National Labor Relations Act, some people don't. Unions negotiate wages, working conditions, and hours of work. They can also negotiate a couple of ancillary things, like payroll deduction and one other thing, but they're not important. A works council, nobody in this society who's not an elected status union representative really can have anything to do with wages, hours in work, and working conditions. I won't get into a thing called management's rights language here, but the shortcoming down there, why you people are at each other's throats, is because the union has failed to tell you what you will get when you join a union for your dues. And a guy named Doran Levin wrote an article in Fortune magazine last month that said that very clearly. What the union has failed to do thus far is make it clear to the workers in a Volkswagen plant what they are going to get in return for their dues dollars. Now, he's mostly correct there because the union is saying very clearly, and especially on the cards that you signed. So we'll just go not to what Bob King said in a newspaper, not to what Gary Castile said. Let's go to the card you signed. Of course, there are two versions of the card you signed. The latest version of the card you signed says that workers will... that joining a union will increase the productivity and the quality in the plant. Those are nothing unions have anything to do with under the laws of our country. Those are management prerogatives. That's what management does. But they also say clearly that you'll have a seat on the Global Works Council of Volkswagen and on the supervisory board. So as far as I can determine, other than saying that the union's going to start to run Volkswagen, which it cannot do, and no company in their right mind in our society is going to let a union tell them how to run their business, that just isn't going to happen. Other than that, in terms of wages, working conditions, and hours of work, they have not made a clear statement in those arenas of what you're going to get in return for your dues dollars. I'm not slamming a union. I'm just telling you what they have and have not done. And you folks need to understand that. And right now, you're just going to have to wait until you see what happens with the NLRB charge. There's just nothing else you can do. There's no doubt in my mind that Volkswagen management isn't going to say anything about what's going on, and neither is the UAW because of the litigation. I'm sorry to hear about your dilemmas in the workplace, but the people who are telling you what you shouldn't listen to, that is pure nonsense. And there are remedies for that, which I'm not going to go into, but all I would say to you is peacefully say to anybody who tells you that, listen, you listen to what you want to listen to, and you talk about what you want to talk about. And I respect your right to do that, and I'm asking you to respect my right to do the same. And I strongly suggest that nobody get into any altercations or any arguments about it. It sounds like when someone does that to you, there are laws against bullying in the workplace. There's some strong laws against that. I'm not advocating getting into a big argument about that. Try and settle the debate peacefully. If you're talking about this show or anything else about the union, and someone doesn't want to respect your right to do that, bring that to their attention in as diplomatic a way you can. Try and not be confrontive about it, even if somebody is confronting you. You guys have had all this uncertainty for a long time. Hopefully now the NLRB will come in and resolve the uncertainty. So that's what I got to say about that question. I hope I've answered your question.
Let me get my mic on here. Yeah, I'm going to bring up 636 and put him on the air or her. 636, you're on.
Yes, sir. How are you seeing?
Well, fine.
Probably ain't going to do much good, but I'm going to make a comment.
Absolutely.
I started a Ford in St. Louis in 1968, and I was forced to terminate my career because of on-the-job injuries in 1988, which was no accident, and I was blackballed by the union and by the government. And if you know the name Jerry Tucker,
yes,
he come to my house with the political and labor reporter, Philip Dine. You ever heard of him?
No, I haven't.
Washington Post. He told me for 20 years he was going to do a story. He had a mountain of documentation to back it up, which I still have today. National Labor Relations Board would not do a thing. FBI, I documented proof that they broke federal law, would not do a thing. You have no idea how powerful Ford Motor Company is. I lost my health. I lost my career. I lost everything I owned. I was forced on disability which took 7 years and five hearings because the lawyer wouldn't show up. Jeez. When I finally did get it, the judge told me, he says, now you take your disability papers into Ford, get your pension and medical benefits started, which I did. The benefits rep would not finish filling out the papers, so they went my pension. I mean, I got documentation to back up a lot of things. And you ask me a question, I'll answer you truthfully.
Well, Dick, you better take over.
I'm not doubting what you're saying, but that's a pretty sketchy description of what you are.
Oh, that's what I say. I'm trying to. I could go into this for an hour.
I know you can. I know you can.
And, I was on your webpage the other day.
And I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people in the area of disabilities and plant injuries. My understanding is if you were injured in a plant and management acknowledged that you're injured in a plant, typically what they'll do is automatically put you into a workers' compensation situation with the state that you're in.
Okay, let me tell you why all this happened.
I was a repairman. Saying that because of your involvement with Tucker, the union wouldn't represent you, if I'm hearing you right, and the corporation...
There's another reason I'm fixing to tell you.
Go on.
Ford labeled me a whistleblower over a bunch of defective emergency brakes. So I was blackballed by Ford, by the union, and by the government. And I have mounds of documentation to back up anything I say.
Okay.
And where was UAW? They were not on my side.
Let me just say this. My understanding of what you're saying, I understand what you're talking about, the whistleblower thing. But you're saying you were hurt in the plant.
Yes, sir, and it was no accident.
All right, so you were hurt. What do you mean it was no accident?
They took my repair classification away from me without justification, and the union let them do it, put me on a job that was known for busting up people's knees. After two knee surgeries, eating Percodans like candy, which is Class C narcotics, they put me in body shop on the hardest job down there, and I couldn't take the pain no more. And they refused to honor doctor's restrictions, which said 8 hours a day sitting or retire me. They said quit or get fired.
Okay. Without protracting this, but the long and short of it is that you did wind up going to court to apply.
No. I did not go to court. I went to court for my disability, yes.
Right. Yeah. Social Security.
Five times, yes. And the first time I went in with 135% disability rating, and they did not dispute it.
What I'm saying is Social Security did grant you a total and complete disability?
Yes.
So you did. I understand 5 years may have went by. And
7 years. 7 years and five hearings.
All right, so you got your Social Security disability, and having done that, somehow you're saying you wound up with no Ford pension?
At 62 I did, yes, a little bit, where I should have been entitled to a disability pension because I was hurt on the job. I was cheated out of it.
Well, you said you went into the plant in 68.
Yes, I started in 68.
Worked for 20 years.
I was forced out in 88.
So that's 20 years.
Yes, sir.
So you were vested in a pension plan for 20 years.
Yes.
Okay, and did you get that pension?
At 62. I should have got it when I took my Social Security papers into the benefits rep. He started filling out the paperwork, but then I asked one little question. And he got all ignorant and wouldn't finish filling out the paperwork.
Oh, they never put you on a sick leave is what you're saying to me.
Correct.
Okay, so instead of being on a sick leave because you were injured, you simply didn't come to work.
No. They canned me. Well, they didn't fire me. They didn't give me the opportunity to quit.
They fired you because you didn't come to work.
No. I went to work. taking Percodans.
What did they fire you?
They did not fire me. I quit. I went in there and I told if you refuse to honor my doctor's restrictions, you're forcing me to terminate my career.
Did you sign any?
Yes, sir. I signed a bunch of papers.
So that you could well have, when you quit, then under the law, you probably your pension fund was vested. So
yeah,
after 10 years,
you get a vested pension.
Understand, but you'd worked for 20.
Yes, sir. I could have done over 30 if I wanted.
I understand. I'm just trying to deal with not could be or should be, but what happened. And
okay.
So what happened was you were the moving party in saying, I'm not going to work anymore. They didn't put you on a sick leave, which left
I couldn't work anymore. I couldn't work anymore.
They never recognized any...
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Even the plant doctor. And the plant doctor knew I was on Percodans.
I understand. But what you're telling me...
That was against the law.
But
it was against federal law to work somebody on machines with Class C, taking Class C narcotics.
I understand that. I understand that. And they knew you were working, taking Class 3 narcotics.
Yes, sir.
Okay. But the long and the short of it is that once you, they didn't put you on a medical leave. You went in and you left of your own volition. You were vested for 20 years in a pension. And so you had to fight this fight out there without any support from the union is what I'm hearing you tell me.
Yes,
and the
like
company
I said,
recognized...
Jerry Tucker come to my house, and he said, hell, he says, yeah, he didn't even stand up for your seniority rights. I had
okay.
7 grievances.
I knew Jerry.
All the way
okay, I knew Jerry. I knew him.
I had 7 grievances, went all the way to the third stage because there was cut and dried violations. And you know what happened to him? Disregard without prejudice.
Well, the union just simply settled the grievance mutually with the company, not in your best interest. I understand that.
No, he threw him in the trash can.
You got your total and complete disability from Social Security.
No,
and you once you got to Social Security age, then you were able to recover your 20 years of pension. Yes or no?
I got a little bit.
You didn't
not what I should not what I should have got.
Didn't recover the whole 20 years?
I got a piece of nothing.
But what I'm asking you, of the years you were vested, you should have recovered those, did you or did you not?
Supposedly.
I don't see your pension check. So your argument, if I understand you, is you probably would have had more had you been adequately represented.
Yes, sir.
That's
should have got a disability pension because I was hurt on the job.
Well, workers' compensation anyway, in addition to your pension.
No, workers' comp had nothing to do with it. It should have come straight from the company. Because I was hurt on the job, and they never disputed it. Never once.
Okay. Well, all right. I think I understand what you're saying. It sounds like you got a pretty bad deal.
Yes, sir, I did.
Even
Gary Tucker agreed.
Between the corporation and the union, that you did get a pretty bad deal. It sounds also like if you talked to Jerry, he probably gave you some advice when he talked with you. And I'm not necessarily interested in going into that. But in the end, I don't disagree with you. When you get between the union and the corporation deciding that neither one of them like you, it's not a very good place to be. And the only thing that actually saved you was the federal law and your disability and...
The federal law did nothing.
Affected your pension benefits as they were vested.
The federal law did nothing. I went straight to the FBI with my paperwork. They said, yeah, they broke federal law and wouldn't do a thing about it.
But
I was blackballed.
Well, you did get your Social Security disability. And you did recover whatever pension years you had. That's what I mean by the government. There are laws that protected your vested earned pension credit years.
The National Labor Relations Board, they would do nothing, even though they had all kinds of documentation. They would do nothing.
That has nothing to do with Social Security disability and ERISA, which guaranteed your earned pension credits. Okay? I understand that there's probably another piece of money in there, not to mention how you were, let's say, not given essential justice, given your situation.
I should have never had been brought to that situation. My local should have seen to it that there was work for me, that they could have found a job for me. In fact, I made a job for myself.
They gave it to an
ex-foreman with less seniority than me that couldn't get an implant driver's license, had a heart condition.
That's called reasonable accommodation, and they didn't provide that for you. I understand that.
Yeah, I don't want to make anybody mad. I'm just saying.
Oh, you're not. Nobody's
this
mad.
This is water under the bridge a long time ago. I just wanted to, you know, state
what happened.
Wanted
to have to say.
I'm sorry?
You wanted to make your case.
Another time. They laid the night shift off, I believe it was in 74, 75. I was dating a girl in Kansas City, and I was going to move up there with her and go to work up to Clay Como plant. They was hiring people off the street, and the union stopped me from going to work there. And I went, then there was a good recommendation from my superintendent, my trim superintendent. I walked right in the front doors and had a job, and the union wouldn't let me go to work there. Figured that out.
Well,
wow.
There's nothing I can say to this, okay? I mean, I was a union representative for a long time. You're telling me what happened to you. I go through in my mind, maybe here's what I might have done, what I blah, blah, and what I might have done may have precluded you from having to say the things you said, but we can't relive that history. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, what's done is done. But, you know.
So, I mean, we're happy to hear.
UAW was not there for me.
Well, and I'm probably not going to disagree with you. Mr. Moderator?
Yes, sir. I hope, I hope you're doing all right now, and I'm sorry.
I'm surviving.
Good.
I was crippled for life, but I'm surviving.
We're sorry about that. We really are. You can just down a line if you would like, and I'm going to read some more emails that we've got.
Yeah, I put some stuff on the page this week.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yes, I did, sir.
All right. John, nice to meet you.
Yes.
My name's Don and Scott, and then you just talked to Dick.
Okay, yeah, I've seen his name on here.
All right. Okay, here's an email from Volkswagen. I have read and seen videos of Bob King telling us how he wants to bring up wages for the American people. He's all for bringing up minimum wage. Then I heard him say the UAW will not ask for a wage increase. Then I read how much he has given back to the company. Now GM and the rest are making huge profits. He's not going for a raise. Is he crazy? Why in the hell would we want to join the UAW? Hell no. King, call me when you realize you work for the people and not the companies. And that's from Jack at Volkswagen. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice.
Go ahead, Scott.
I would say that's pretty self-explanatory, isn't it?
King did say that. He probably wouldn't be negotiating wages in the next contract.
Yes, he did. He'd
be negotiating it anyway.
Yeah. He has negotiated money out of our pocket, so I'll say that.
Not much.
Jack has said he's read most of the stuff that we've all read. Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
And what Jack is saying are things that Bob King has said and that the union has made in public statements. There are a number of people, let me just say this to you, Jack. Those of us, our Facebook page, Workers Work Unions, other Facebook pages, there are a number of them, are way more unhappy than you are because they're in the plants. And as Scott said, we've lost a lot of stuff that we had. And for the record, there's nothing you've said that isn't a matter of public record. As to why the hell or not you should join the union, we have to replay our tape recording and say, look, this is an individual decision that you have to make on your own, as long as the other 1,567 people down at Volkswagen. That's about as much as we've not computed anything that you've said, and I've read way more stuff than probably you have. I have my own personal frustrations, and I'm not even working in the plant anymore, and I know that Scott does, and Don, because they are. They were both around when they had a lot more what they were taking home than what they have now. There are a lot of people who are organizing now, who are in the union. I talked with a group of people today who are preparing resolutions for the collective bargaining convention. Oh, you don't know what that is. We have written a resolution that's on our Facebook page. I shouldn't say we because there is a person who's on, who is part of the Facebook page, who has written three versions of a resolution. It's in its third version right now. And that particular resolution is to ask that retirees get separate ratification rights over the next collective bargaining agreement. And I, for one, wholeheartedly support that. We give it to skilled trademen. I talked to another group of they who are preparing resolutions. And they are submitting a resolution to do away with the tier two wage structure as a matter of policy of the International Union. So you're not alone in your frustration. All the way from an old retiree like me to active workers like Scott and Don, and I can probably steal you a couple of Facebook sites that make your hair stand on end. Some things people are saying about working in the plants. The sad part of this is while Bob King is out there running around the world, there's a huge article this week in Automotive News by a reporter named Bunkley, and there's a long Bob King's last stand. It's not an attack on Bob King. It's simply documenting much of what he's done in the last 3.5 years as president in terms of organizing. You need to talk about your plant down there, among other plants that he's been trying to organize. And globe-trotting around the world, trying to form a global union movement, and all this kind of stuff. If we had a strike fund with $900 million in it, and we weren't taking money out of our strike fund to pay for all this stuff, I'd say, good on you, you're president, do what you want. The fact is, though, is that the cost of all this is coming out of our strike fund. And that weakens us more in terms of dealing with management than having less members. The fact that General Motors started out in 2011 with 48,500 people, and we now have maybe 51,000, and we're probably building 10-15% more cars. Doesn't make me a happy camper. I know it doesn't make people who are active workers in the plant. But this article, you might want to find it on the internet and read it. He had a grand vision in 2010 of what he was going to do. And now he's only got 7 months left. And he just took a bunch of people from Nissan to Paris, France. to tell the French union workers about how horrible it is to work for Nissan in Canton, Mississippi. Took a bunch of people down to Brazil about a month ago to picket Nissan dealers in Brazil to try and get Nissan to give him not a secret ballot vote in Canton, Mississippi, but a card ring. He's running out of time, and this article basically says that. He's got about 7 months left to go. Usually when people get confronted with, I'm running out of time, I know I got a lot of things I want to do and I don't have enough time, our brains tend to lock up on us. And there's so many things we're trying to do at the same time that we wind up not doing even one of them very well. And this man has a lot of irons in the fire. There's nothing anybody can do about what he's doing. The IEB, which is our board of directors, has chosen to let him run around the world and spend what he wants to spend. Doesn't say much for whoever's going to be the next president. That's a dilemma that those of us that are in the union, we keep hoping that somebody's going to become president of this union and take it back where it belongs to be. We're all hoping for that. But there's nothing we can do about what Bob King is doing or not doing right now. It saddens me. It frustrates other people. But that's just the reality of our life as union members. Once again, this union, a union can do good things for you if it chooses to do them. If it chooses not to do them, then maybe it's a waste of money. And what a union is supposed to do before it does anything else, like works councils and supervisory boards, is wages, working conditions, and hours of work in the interest of the members. That's why you join a union. You join a union for the same reason you went in the factory, the same reason Scott went in and Don went in and I went in, and we talked about that in the show. Don and Scott and I went in the factory to get the money and the benefits.
Absolutely.
We didn't give a damn what we had to do to get it. And factories in those days were not the clean operating room factory that you work in, I can promise you. And we didn't care. I didn't care. I didn't care what they wanted me to do. All I knew was I wanted to get that hourly wage, and I wanted to get that health care that they were providing me, and a pension at the end of the rainbow. And unfortunately, that the organizing drives that are being conducted in the transplants right now, they are telling people essentially, we're not going to do anything in those areas for you. We're going to... At Nissan, we're going to give you a voice in a workplace, and we're going to stop Nissan from violating your human rights, whatever that means. They're telling you guys you're going to get a works council, a global works council seat, and a supervisory board. I don't know what they're telling them down in advance. I've seen a couple of articles at the Mercedes plant. I'm not sure what they're telling them. Nor am I sure what they're telling them in BMW. But I know what they're not telling them. They're not telling them, if you join the union, we're going to increase your wages, we're going to make your working conditions better, and your hours of work are going to be humane and not screw up your family life. That's what we're not telling people. And if we would stop not telling people what we're going to do about their wages, working conditions, and hours of work, then I think even you, Jack, would be clamoring at the gates of Solidarity House to join. And anybody else. We can solve our organizing problem Monday morning by telling the workers at Nissan, at Mercedes, at Volkswagen, and at BMW, we're going to get you a pay raise. We're going to get you a defined benefit pension plan instead of a defined contribution plan like you folks have. And we're going to get you better health care than you have right now. And we're gonna make the company pay for more of the premium of the health care than what you guys have to pay down there. Ian came in there and told you guys those three things. I promise you, Jack, you'd be in line to say, where do I sign?
That's right.
I was, and Don, when we went into the plants along with Scott. That's what we go into these factories for. Money and benefits and a pension at the end of the rainbow. Is there any other reason anybody goes into a factory? I can't find it. I wish my union would stop this stuff and put that out there. Bob King would have a great chance, even in 7 months, of getting a number of those plants from the foreign automakers. But Bob King probably won't do that. So I'm offering him my free advice at no cost. You want the transplants, wages, working conditions, and hours of work, including wages, benefits, and pensions, increase pay, defined benefit, defined benefit pension plan where the worker pays nothing. Low wages in today's workplaces, to say to workers at these levels of wages to fund your own pension plan, pensions are otherwise usually considered a negotiated deferred wage. That's still legal in this country. And there's all the more reason why our union should not be saying to supplier plant workers and transplants, we're going to get you a defined benefit pension plan so that the money you're having to set aside for your retirement you can take home and buy bread and butter and gas and pay your mortgage with. That's what defined benefit pension plans are there for. Seem to not be interested in that. I don't know why, and I'm not going to buy the thing is we got to keep the companies globally competitive. Companies being kept globally competitive is the responsibility of management, not the reduced incomes that workers give to them to do that. They don't need money out of Don and Scott's pocket to be globally competitive. They don't need Don and Scott's pension plan to be frozen and telling guys like Scott and Don, after 30 years, you can't earn a pension benefit. That's nonsense. General Motors and Ford and Chrysler don't need it, neither do any of these transplants. They're making money hand over fist. There needs to be an equitable sharing of the wealth. And that don't mean simply taking COLA away from Don and Scott at $1 an hour and say, learn to live with 40 hours a week less. Bankruptcy notwithstanding. That's my rant for the night. I'll let it go. I got off on a rabbit path.
All right. Okay, here's one I think is from our plant. Hello, everyone. I'm a temp. Yeah, it is our plant. I'm working as a temp at Flint Truck. I have been there for over a year and a half. I heard I will be laid off around the end of the year. I have a family and just making it. Do you know if there will be any opportunities to go somewhere else? I asked the union, and I'll get back with you. They never do. This is my life they are messing with. Please, if there is anything you can tell me, please do. A very concerned family in Flint. Wow.
Jesus Christ, you're kidding me.
That hurts.
Well, you guys know more about your plant than I do. Are they going to lay off temps at the first of the year?
Well, at the end of the year, from what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Where you are?
Yeah, just before Christmas time.
Just before Christmas. I was just going to say that. The most humane time, right?
Right.
Well, as a temporary...
You guys are working full out in that plant, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, three shifts, you bet. As a temporary, unfortunately, you have no rights to move. you know, to transfer to another plant. I would call Region 1C, because I remember back in June, I believe, at the union meeting, I remember Norwood Jewel was talking about that. And call over and talk to Region 1C and ask them, you know, you've been paying your dues and you'd like to see a little return on that now and find out what's going to happen. Because I know we're going to need more people when the new truck rolls out next year.
This person's been here 18 months, though.
Yeah, but this
guy that walked in here 90 days ago.
Used to be the contract said after 100 days, all these temporaries were made permanent, too, didn't it? Yeah.
I'd have to research that.
Yeah.
I believe you're right, Scott.
That was prior to the 2011 Bob King agreement, though, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Bob
yes.
King fixed that. So here's a guy, he's a family man, 18 months in the plant. He may as well have 18 days in the plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Well, you know, you've heard my feelings before. Tier 2, okay. But all these temporary classifications, flex, temporary, long-term temp, that is nonsense. If you're going to bring people in other than at a
reduced wage?
At a reduced wage, then bring them in as a Tier 2. Give them the health care. Give them a 401k plan and give them 90 days. Give them seniority after 90 days. There's
I
no,
agree.
No rational reason in the world for however old this person is to be there 18 months and be living day to day. I mean, this guy can't buy a television set on payments, let alone a car or a house. And we're doing that.
Yes, we are.
No, we're not doing that.
What I got to say, so.
Yeah. I wish that there was some glimmer of hope that we could offer. But you're not a... You should have been hired in at least at Tier 2. I agree with Dick. At least at Tier 2. You've been there that long. They should have hired you by now. Because evidently you're still working. Evidently they need you.
Not, there just should be no flex temporary and long-term temporary. There just should
no.
There should be Tier 2 and you guys, period.
Yeah.
Somebody
I
can
think,
work in a GM plant for 18 months under a UAW contract, have no seniority, no job protection, no nothing.
Crazy.
So if I'm a Volkswagen worker listening to this, tell me again why I want to join the UAW?
Well, I never thought that they were. I just got so distracted by this person's happenstances.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
You guys don't even know how many temps are in that plant, do you?
I don't anymore, no. I know two works with us on first shift.
Right. I think last time I heard we had about 70.
How can this chairman down in Local 2209 be talking about how many temps are in the plant? And you guys can't even begin to get an educated guess.
I don't know.
You've seen that 2209 site, Scott.
Sure.
Tells you how many temps are in the plant.
Yeah, they'll tell you.
That mitigates this person's happenstance. 18 months, no seniority rights, and no more job security than Monday morning you come to work and say there's no work for you.
Right.
18 months is a long time. 16 million annual car year. 16 million cars being sold in this society, and we got to have somebody like this. Plants. I can see it if we're only making 9 million cars a year, but the annual sales have gone up every year since 2009. And these managements, have had all the time in the world with sales projection to plan their workforce out and make humane decisions on how many workers they need. And they sure didn't need temp, flex, and long-term temp in the 2011 agreement, that's for sure. Of course, they got a temporary flex agreement down in the Spring Hill plant for that new Equinox line. You can find that
and
out. Agreement for flex workers.
And at Grand Rapids, or not Grand Rapids, Grand River.
Oh, that's too depressing. Late at night. I'm sorry, my friend. I didn't mean to be this way, but I can't, there's nothing I can say about your dilemma. I think you got some good advice from Scott or Donna. Call the region, ask them what options you have. We're going to do almost 16 million cars this year, and you guys are going to be putting people in the street at the end of the year.
Yep.
As well for how Dan Ackerson is managing the company. Well, we need to move on with the questions, Don. I'm sorry we can't help you, my friend.
All right. Do you guys have any information on what's going on with General Holyfield? Something is up, but no one is talking. I'm a Chrysler employee, and I'm sure you can understand why I will not put my name on this. Just a concerned auto worker from Detroit. I understand completely why you don't put your name on there.
There was some discussion about that and some people I talked with today. According to the newspapers, There's two problems he has in his life. One is a few months back, Chrysler Joint Center, like the Center for Human Resource at GM on Walker and the Ford National Training Center downtown next to Cobo Hall. The Chrysler Joint Center is now on Chrysler property out at M59 and I-75. And it came to light in a newspaper that somebody out of the National Training Center came to light, was selling jobs. The number was for $3,000. If somebody was selling jobs, then that means that Chrysler was providing the jobs. Whether they were knowingly involved in this or not, the Department of Labor would have raise an eyebrow to that, because that where that settles down is a violation of the RICO Act. So what happened to that, all I know is some top AA to General Holyfield suddenly retired. That's one situation. Now keep in mind, this guy's the vice president of the Chrysler Department, and that guy worked for him. His other dilemma is a domestic dilemma, where he had some problem with the law. His first wife and he were having some serious problems. The Free Press says that she called the police. They took him away. He has subsequently divorced her and married another woman, and was over in Europe, I think it was this year, on his honeymoon, much publicized honeymoon. Now, I don't know, the newspaper article seemed to feel like the domestic problem has reared its head again, and we don't know if what's happened with the job selling thing. We know that Holyfield, according to Bob King, who held a press conference, said that General Holyfield is still a vice president of the UAW and that he is not at work, apparently, and that he has added, King has added more people to the Chrysler Department. And in talking with some folks today, that's as much as they know, too. There's a absolute 10 feet of concrete poured on top of all this stuff between Chrysler. You got to understand that if you involve a big company like Chrysler in this kind of a thing, they're moving heaven and earth to make it just go away. And then you got the UAW involved. And so they've simply said that Holifield is still a vice president. That's all King would say. There was a meeting at Region 1 and Region 1A that Bob King attended, where they called all the local union leaders together, and Bob King made it clear to them that Holifield was still a vice president of the UAW, and that's as much as he would say, because you have a predominant of Chrysler plants in Region 1 and 1A. So we can't shed any more light on it. The last time anybody wrote about it, I think it was Brent Snavely in the Free Press, and it had to have been 2 weeks or more ago. And since then, there's been not a word, and you probably won't hear a word until something significant happens. What law enforcement agencies are involved, if any, on either of those two things, if they are the two things, the only thing anybody knows is that he's still a vice president of Chrysler. There's no other law. As I told the people from Volkswagen, there's a legal proceeding going on now. There's investigations going on down at Volkswagen by the National Labor Relations Board. My guess is the same thing is going on, and nobody's going to say anything until the investigations are concluded, the facts are in, and somebody does something. That's my take. Next question.
Okay. All right. Dick, what's your thoughts on King saying pensions should not be cut for Detroit workers? I myself found it funny knowing that he put restrictions on our own pensions. Retiree Matt Wilson from Detroit Axle.
Matt Wilson. Detroit Axle?
That's what he's got down.
Well, there's Eldon Avenue Axle Plant, which is a Chrysler plant. I think it's still open. In any event, Matt, I put a post on our Facebook page, Workers, Workplaces, and Unions. There was a woman who made a comment about what happened to the pensions in the UAW. And I read the article that you're quoting, that Bob King volunteered himself to go in and save the Detroit union workers and their pension plan. And I said, very ironic, because Bob King says, okay, look, I'm super qualified to help unions deal with pension plans when they're threatened. I find it ironic because in the 2011 contract, this man negotiated the closing down, not only the pension cuts, he closed down the defined benefit pension plans in Ford, GM, and Chrysler. He not only closed them down, you can close it down, means nobody else gets in. It doesn't mean you're taking away people's benefits. But he did something with the benefits, too, to keep the companies globally competitive. He said that we will freeze the pension rate at 2000 and whatever they were in 2007. And moreover, he said that once a person gets to 30 years, they will not earn any more pension credit years. So if Scott in 2 years gets to 30 years and he has to work another 10 years, he's not going to earn any pension credit years for those 10 years. If he works 40 years, he's going to get a 30-year pension. That's the barroom definition of what King did to earn pension credit years. As far as the freezing the rate, if you take $52.25 per month per year that Scott and Don are entitled to, were entitled to in 2007, and put it into a CPI COLA calculator, and you enter 52.25 from 2007, and what would you need to have the same buying power in 2013? It's something like $61 and change. So I don't know what Don and Scott's buying power of their pensions will be 5 years from now. And so now Bob King goes to Detroit, slams his fist on a table, and say pensions should not be cut. This is the guy that just negotiated this stuff 2 years earlier. So he doesn't have a problem going to another union and saying pensions should not be cut. But he sure didn't have a problem doing that in 2011 for about 140,000 active workers in Ford, GM, and Chrysler. That's what I think about his comment. And anybody else who wants to add to it or argue with me about it, I'm sitting here.
There you go. Scott?
I absolutely agree. I think it's despicable.
And the Fed's it then.
I mean, it's just, you can't say enough of how wrong it is. Absolutely wrong. And you guys keep hearing me say this, and I'm gonna, like Dick says, you know, maybe if I say enough, it'll sink in. Stop and think, how many vehicles did we make at General Motors? How many employees did we have? What was the financial status before taxes? Is their net profit? Again, divide that by the number of employees, and you figure out how many millions of dollars we each contributed to the profit of the corporation.
There you go. All right. Let me get this one out. I read that GM has received a tax abatement for a new paint shop. Dick, I talked to Donnie about this, and he said, don't get my hopes up. It's the same tax abatement we had before, and you see no paint shop. Is he right about this, Dick? Jamie in Flint, truck plant.
I'm going to make one comment and give it to Scott because he gave me a very hard lecture about this week. They were going to build a $375 million new paint plant there when you had your old chairman, Dana Roush. They had a big press conference and announced it. And now, about 3 years later, they're going to build a $124 million
paint shop,
a paint addition, and they wanted a tax abatement. When I brought that up to Scott, I got this lecture on Scott, which Scott should give to all of you who are listening now.
Please do, Scott. I think I know what you're going to say, but go ahead and say it.
Well, you take a poke at it. I want to hear your thoughts on this, too.
Oh, go ahead, baby.
Well,
I already said my piece at work. Go ahead.
Well, I was just, I can't even remember what I said. I get...
You said you've been down this road a number of times with them going to make an investment in the plant.
Absolutely.
Oh. Absolutely. I mean, and look at the hundreds of millions of dollars they're spending all around the world. I mean, Dick told you a couple weeks ago about what's going on with Mexico and where we're at. You know, it's awful funny. You know, remember we were going to have a new engine plant, and that got put off onto the side, right? So
yes.
They spent a bunch of money over at the V6 plant. They did away with the remainder of Buick City. Excuse me, brought them over. We have two locals inside that plant now at V6. You have the same chop chairman or the same plant manager that was at Buick City and at the engine complex. And what we have now is in the past. You look at the amount of money that they've offered And like we said, they've already offered this once, and the initial investment was a lot more, and now it's half or less than half than what it was before. And, well, it's been, what, 5 years now since an ex-chairman said that to us?
Yeah, I think. I'd give it an answer.
Four to 5 years it's been.
Yeah.
And it hasn't happened yet. And, you know, that individual who's since then has went down to work at Solidarity House for Vice President Joe Ashton. And it seems like he would have had some clout. He might have helped push that along the way. But that didn't happen. I was telling Dick, you know, I remember this is my fifth plant. I've been to some other plants before. I've been at plants that have had relatively new paint departments. They're not cheap. They're not cheap. But the thing that gets me is when the union goes to this public hearing meeting, I would want our guys to be there to be informed as far as the information that's being given. I don't know. I haven't been able to talk to either one of the people who were there who represented our plant as far as what's going on. But it shouldn't take 5 years to work up what this is going to cost. I mean, you as well as I know, when paint goes down, it costs us.
Well, they're only making one-third the investment they were going to make 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
One-third the amount of money.
That's what I tell the person. I know where this is coming from. I told them, don't get your hopes up. We've been through this with Joe before.
Right.
Well, all right. What's the next question?
All right. That's another Volkswagen person, name withheld. I work at Volkswagen in Tennessee. I'm one that signed to stop UAW from storming us into a union. I wish there was something you could say to change my mind, but after reading everything UAW gave back to GM, Ford, and Chrysler, there's no way I could ever want to be a part of the union. But I will listen to this UAW show, and maybe you will say something that will change my mind. Name withheld.
Well, I think we've pretty much addressed that with a couple of other. We're not trying to change anybody's mind one way or another here. We're only saying what our opinions are. You folks down at Volkswagen or Nissan or BMW or Mercedes, we may appear a little biased every once in a while when we have a lot of years of experience between the three of us. We all can look back at least 25, 28 years of doing this stuff and a whole lot of contracts. We know what the current contracts are today. When we do tend to appear to be being a little bit biased, it's because we're looking back at what was and trying to figure out what the heck happened. What I just described about pension plans, no one could have conceived of even 5 years ago. Could have even thought in their wildest dreams that could happen. Even in the bankruptcy, the pension plans were left intact. And so I have my views of that. Scott has his, Dan has his. We're not trying to convince you where to join a union. You said you've read in the papers. You see what the concessions have been. Make up your mind. Were they needed? Were they not needed? And believe me that they're what goes on in the Detroit 3 plants right now. The concessions that are at least as problematic as the fact that Scott and Don have not had a wage increase in, well, there's some debate here, let's say in 8 years, is the second thing I talked about, wages. They haven't had a wage increase, but, you know, they didn't have a wage decrease either, let's put it that way. But working conditions have become a literal nightmare, especially under this 2011 agreement. And it's not so much that management is walking around with bullwhips. Working conditions includes the union providing you with representation, provides that you can, when you have a union, you have a voice, all right, but it's not the voice Bob King is talking about. When you have a union, only the union has a voice to management. You don't. It's like hiring a lawyer. Once you hire a lawyer, the lawyer says, all right, I'm taking your money, I'm your lawyer. Now, your job is to shut up and don't talk to anybody. Don't say anything unless I tell you to say it. And don't talk to anybody unless they talk to somebody. The relationship is essentially that. Union representatives have a legal standing under the law. They are, in fact, your lawyer. They can be a whole lot of other things, but first and foremost, they represent you to the company. And so the voice you have is if you call your union representative out and say, blah, 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 blah. You express your voice to your union representative, not your foreman, not to labor relations. You express your voice to the union representative, who then goes, the person that person is supposed to be dealing with is your supervisor. The shop floor union representative has no reason to represent your interest to anybody but your immediate supervisor. So that's the voice that exists in the workplace. When Bob King says you're going to have a voice, the voice that management will hear will be coming from some status union representative's mouth. That's the voice that they will hear. The person who will hear your voice is your shop floor union representative, if you have one. I've had this conversation with some folks about whether you would even have shop floor union representatives. We have negotiated contracts in the UAW where there are no what Scott and Don know to be district committee people. We had that at Saturn. We had 7,300 people down there, and there were no district committee people. There was just the five people on the shop committee who could write grievances for them. And it could well likely be that the new I'll postulate here, that Bob King says there'll be a new system of labor management relations. I can promise you there's nothing Bob King can come up with we haven't already done in this union. And probably the single example of that is Saturn. You can't be any more innovative out of the existing laws in our society than what we had at Saturn. There's just no way to be. There is going to be nothing new. He may say we'll have a different relationship. Part of that could be that your 1,567 people won't have any what we call district committeemen. If we could do it for 7,300 people at Spring Hill, we could sure do it there. And of course, management has to pay the union representatives. So 1,500 people, what, that's 4 per 1,000? Or you'd have six districts and 1,500 people, something like that, Scott?
Yep.
All right, so you'd be entitled to 4 district committee people. And management has to pay them for not working. It isn't enough paying for your bargaining committee representatives for not working. They have to be paid. And if you have benefit representatives, you have to pay them for not working. So these are all added costs to the corporation. So if the new Internet Relations at Volkswagen means there won't be any committee men, I promise you, it ain't not either new. We did all that stuff in 1985 at Saturn. That's a few years back. So you gotta just kind of make up your minds down there about what you want to do. I think I wandered off the path here, Scott. So if you got something to say, why don't you close it off?
And that was in emails. So Scott, you said you had something to say also. So you got the time to do it.
Give me the question again. I'm looking through about three different things right now.
I got to find a question.
I may have covered all that stuff anyhow.
I think you did. It was the Volkswagen.
Oh, yeah. He already went to see that earlier.
Let's move on. Next
all
question.
Right. No more questions. Scott, you said you had something that you wanted to talk about.
Right. Yeah, this last week, I mean, I know Dick goes through all this stuff, but Ward's had an article, it's been 2 weeks ago now. They're talking about GM rolls out serious luxury pickup contenders. Premium full-size pickup trucks priced at above $40,000 are among the U.S. auto industry's hottest selling and most profitable products. Of course, you know, Ford has the Ranch King and Ram has the Laramie Longhorn. In the article, it says General Motors has struggled to compete in the luxury and horsepower drench, with the gussied up versions of its regular Silverado and GM Sierra Denali trucks. Now, I will say this, the Denali truck doesn't compete with anybody. It's a truck all of its own. It's you've seen one of our Denalis. They're a Cadillac of a truck, I'll tell you. Granted, they got a high price. But I don't see anybody else who makes a truck that's going to compete with that Denali. And now they have the High Country, which is going to be a really, as the article said, a gussied up version of the Chevrolet Silverado. And that's going to start at 45. I mean, we've talked about the sales on these trucks and stuff, and then you go back. I think Dick can help me out. I think it was just this last week. There were some problems that some of these dealerships were complaining about. They told me they were trying to move these trucks, and they needed some incentives. So they offered some incentives, and they got them between $1,500 and $2,000 in incentives. Now, by the way, you can get $3,500 off of 2014 right now. Or you can lease a quad cab four-wheel drive for under $230 a month. But set the lease thing aside. No, a quad cab four-wheel drive half-ton Silverado for under $230 a month right now. Leasing.
You're gonna, as Christmas comes on, my friends, you're going to see incentives and leases that are going to blow your minds.
Well, let me continue. The dealer, if you remember the article, I'm sure you read it, and I'll prime your memory a little bit. The dealers that they talked to, one was in California, the other one was in Texas. The one in California says it's making it tough to stay in business because they got the incentives. General Motors rolled out the incentives on top of this so-called new GM discount that they give us less of. And what happened was they got it. It wasn't even 10 days later. They came back with the revised MRSP, and they raised the price to $1,500. That was the start. Some of them go more than that, but I'm just saying. That ate up their incentives. So this guy in California says, look, you're making it tough for me to stay in business out here because if we know how the dealer networks work and how they're forced to take on so many new vehicles anyway, he has a 170-day supply trucks in his location.
Wow.
And the guy in Texas is in the same boat. In Texas is in the same boat. He has a 140-day supply.
Jesus, that's incredible.
You know, I mean, I went and looked at a new truck myself here a couple, 3 weeks ago. And I'm going to tell you what, there's a buttload of 2014s out there.
Damn, I didn't know that.
Well, you know, they jacked the price up. You know, here I go. I'm going to get back on my soapbox, you know, for a minute. Look, you jack these prices up. You come out and you let Stephen Gursky badmouth us in the openly in the media, and say that it's the retirees and their pensions that we have to raise the price by almost $2,000 on the vehicle. And like what Dick would say, well, let's counter off then how much are you offering for an incentive on each hood? Average about $3,500 for an average. Okay, so there goes that argument, but he still said it. So what do? We harvest the workforce. We cut a worker between you and two guys down the line, or the gal two jobs down, and we cut one of those jobs in there, and we cut them jobs up and divided it up into thirds, and now you get a third more, and this person gets a third more, and another person gets a third more. Okay, so we say, okay, well, we save $2,000 off the price of the vehicle by doing away with that job. That person's gone. Okay, well, then what else do they do? They come out to the supplier. They tell them, hey, look, you know, you need to bring us in a little more competitive rate on the parts that we're getting from you, or we're going to have to go shopping somewhere else, Mexico, China, India. Anyway, they get it, okay? So now I've got $2,000 off the worker's back. I got another $2,000 off of the supplier. And what do? Instead of lowering the price of the vehicle, because they said it was because of the pensions, okay, I raised the price by $2,000. Who ultimately pays that price? The consumer. Okay, plus one more person who isn't probably going to buy one of your vehicles because they've been let go. Because eventually you're going to let people go, like the temporary. You're going to let people go. Eventually you're going to run out of temporaries, you're going to start doing away with Tier 2s. Do you think you're going to come back and buy another General Motors vehicle? Probably not. But here's the deal. That's $6,000. That's $6,000. Who's smiling to the bank on that one? Just thinking. You know, people got to think sometimes outside that box and think about what these guys are saying. That was a flat insult to you and I. You know, and to every how many retirees are there now, Dick, in General Motors?
380,000.
There's 380,000 people who should be picking up the phone and calling the president's office and saying, why didn't you address that with Mr. Gursky in the media?
Well, they're channel stuffing again.
Exactly.
Stuffing. And they're doing it because I've said it on this show before. The finances at General Motors are not all what they're cracked up to be. And a lot of people don't understand what the elephant in the room is on General Motors' so-called financial performance. Coming out of the bailout, General Motors got a $48 billion tax break. The government forgave them $48 billion worth of taxes they would otherwise have to pay during the 5 years after the bailout. For a lot of the profits they're showing, they know that they can claim, I don't know how much of the $48 billion they've used up so far. But if you'll remember, last year, General Motors took a $30 billion charge. Remember that, Scott?
Yes.
And I said that was found money. And all the profit and the profit sharing they paid, take $30 billion off of that. So they had $48. So if they didn't use any of it other than last year, they've only got $18 billion in taxes left. And when that's gone, they're going to have to start paying taxes. But it took $30 billion simply to get you guys a profit-sharing check last year. They charge it off to goodwill, remember? They put it on their books.
Right.
So the finances of General Motors, there was a financial analyst that brought that up again day before yesterday. Why isn't General Motors stock higher than what it is? Because their bottom line at the end of the quarter and at the end of the year is still got that built-in tax break, which means they can hide their true economic performance. And the sad part here is that they're in there, and if they're going to lay off these temps, I think they pretty much harvested you guys as much as they can harvest you without causing dysfunction. And so maybe what they're doing is they're channel stuffing. They know they're going to have to take a $60,000 pickup truck and put $10,000 on the hood of it. I'm still waiting for my automotive news that will come in and give me what their inventory supply is. I didn't get it in this last issue. Where I'm thinking is they're going to do their third quarter announcement here in about 3 days, and I've made no secret about the fact that I'm just salivating to see that little puppy and how much they're doing, because I go simply to the asset and liability page. They're still over there screwing around. Now they invested in Peugeot in France, just like they did in Fiat. And now they're saying, no, we don't think we should have made that investment, so we're going to pull out of that. Well, they just did that within the last 18 months. Now they're saying, no, we don't need the French company to design any trucks. We'll just go back and design Opels back in Rüsselsheim in Germany. Well, who's paying for that peccadillo? I mean, that's like GM bought into Fiat, then had to give Fiat $2 billion to walk away from them. They've got the exact same situation now with Peugeot. They bought a piece of Peugeot. They were saying there was a natural synergy between Peugeot and Opel. Now they're saying, well, there really ain't that much synergy between Peugeot and April. Now the French unions are up in arms. Because that was supposed to bring work. They were going to, if you remember, and a lot of you weren't following it, they were going to take the work out of Bochum and put it in France in a Peugeot plant. Now they're saying, no, as a matter of fact, we can't see any real reason for us to be doing anything with Peugeot. And the real reason for that is because the Chinese, who are partners with General Motors and Shanghai Automotive Industry, there's a Chinese company that now has bought a chunk of Peugeot. And Shanghai Automotive Industry doesn't want to be in competition in the same company with Dongfeng Automobile Company in China. So here we are with another one of these Raytheon, EDS, use nonsensical deals that in just a little over a year they say, oh no, what a good idea. It's like Bob King taking $110 million out of the strike fund to organize a trans fans. He's looking back with 7 months ago and say, well, maybe that might not have been such a good idea. And I heard today that this is not substantiated, that it affords sub-council. It was put before a Ford sub-council to get an endorsement from the delegates to raise the dues to $2.50 a month, 2.5 hours a month. That ought to make you guys happy.
Oh, I'm ecstatic.
What's a half hour's dues worth to you guys? $4 a month?
Jeez.
You want another half an hour dues from me, you better give me a 3% annual wage increase in my cost of living back.
Well, you know, I heard this as anecdotal, but I heard this earlier this week. If these morons down in Solidarity House think they can turn to you guys who haven't had a raise in 8 years and tell you they need to, whose pensions they froze, and tell you you need to pay more dues, while he's off going through $60 million in organizing, and so far has organized nothing. Oh, I take it back. Two small supplier plants in the South. 172 at one plant, and I think maybe marginally 200 at another. But if they're really talking about that, then, you know, there was a book written once, Stupid Things That Smart People Do. Well, there are stupid things that really stupid people do. And to turn around to you guys who are in the plants, given all that has come out of your pockets, and to say, we want to dip in for a little bit more, this just might be the thing that tips the scale, Scott.
Absolutely.
Because I can't get anybody interested in talking about what happened to the pension plans, and I did that for 2 hours today. And all I heard about was some other kinds of things that needed to change. And these are all people whose pension plans have been frozen. Doesn't even hit the table.
Huh.
If these people down there, you know, touch the third rail, touch the dues rail, that just be it may be enough to get people angry enough to say, wait a minute. I mean, to look at the pensions, to really look hard at those pensions and think in terms of what that means to people in their retirement lives. So, I mean, I really believe, you know, they take $25 million a year out of strike fund and put it in general fund. You know they do that on a regular basis now.
Right.
Okay? Not counting the chunks of money they take out for special projects. And I'm telling you, I think, you know, the last LM2 we got was for 2012. This is 2013. I really believe that Brother King has gone through just boxcars full of money in his 4 years. Just boxcars full. The IEB knows what it is, but we won't know until next year this time what happened in 2000, and I think it's 2013. We're always a year behind. But I really believe that this guy shares genes with Rick Wagner. Now, they call Rick Wagner what? Red Ink Rick, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, I can't think of what rhymes with Bob. But I'm telling you, I think, and I had this discussion with a very highly educated friend of mine, I said, this union is doing exactly what General Motors did between 2004 and 2000. And we're spending money we really don't have to spend.
We have 60 seconds left.
Okay.
If anybody in the chat room would like to call in, now is your time.
Because I've already had 2 hours on the phone with this kind of stuff today.
Hey, Scott, can you give me a call when you're done?
Yes, I can.
All right.
Call you on your cell, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
Well, I guess we're just going to wrap her up tonight, and we'll go from there, right?
We We hope that you found the program interesting and of some use and some value. That is our goal here, to be of some use and value to the listeners.
Yes. Absolutely.
We don't advocate. We work very hard not to advocate anything. We just hope that whatever knowledge and experience we've had that we bring forth is of use and value to people.
Fair enough.
Yep.
That's
fair
good.
Enough. Okay, well, with that,
9 o'clock and 20 seconds right now.
Right now, we're done.
9 o'clock.
Oh, we're done. All right.
We'll see everybody next week, hopefully. Go ahead, Scott.
All right, Dick, I'll probably call you tomorrow. I got something I'm going to run by you.
Yes.
And, Don, I'll call you in just a couple minutes.
Yeah, give me a couple minutes and call me.
Okay.
Buddy, all right. Good night, and good night all.
Good night.
Good night, buddy.